Thank you, Mr. President. I know we've reached 10:30. Can we do the proclamation first?
We'll get
people
out of here
waiting.
We'll
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a proclamation to consider for Soil and Water Stewardship Week. Proclaiming April 28th through May 5th, 2013 as Soil and Water Stewardship Week, whereas fertile soil and clean water provide us with our daily subsistence, and effective conservation practices have helped provide us a rich standard of living, and our security depends upon healthy soil and clean water, and stewardship calls for each person to help conserve these precious resources. Now, therefore, the Sussex County Council does hereby proclaim April 28th through May 5th, 2013, as Soil and Water Stewardship Week. Signed, Michael H. Vincent, President, dated April 23rd, 2013. We have some representatives here today that would come forward and receive.
Down here, Mr. Wilson will be glad to present that and get his picture taken. And
good to see both of you. First, keep this ready to you, so. You read again, give you a proclamation of how important stewardship is. This organization here, believe it or not, helps all the county. Everybody has to have drainage problems, so there's not one little area that thinks it's helping those people. But anyway, I'll take it. I should have took my glass off. Take another picture.
You've got to reload.
And their names. Did they give their names?
Good to see you. Good to see you, Debbie.
Nice to meet you. Did they give their names?
I'll be brief. I know you have some business that you want to conduct.
Give us your name.
Absolutely. I'm David Baird, the district coordinator with the Sussex Conservation District, and Debbie Absher, our director of agriculture programs, is joining me today. And it's always a pleasure to be here in front of you. Each and every year to talk about Soil and Water Stewardship Week, and this year is no different with our theme of where does your water shed. And we all know here in Sussex County that's a critical element and has been a main topic of conversation not only before this body but before our representatives in our local communities as well as at the General Assembly level and in many households around the county. So with that being said, here in Sussex County, our water supply is critical to everything we do. Not only do we rely on it for clean and affordable drinking water, but it's also an essential natural resource that enables the county's agricultural, commercial, manufacturing, tourism, and recreational industries to be successful. So it's an important part of our life. It always has been and will continue to be in the future. And on behalf of the district, we appreciate the partnership we've had over the years with County Council. We look forward to continuing that, and we'll have that discussion a little bit further over the next week, because I believe at this time next week we'll have a joint meeting between our board and the County Council, and we'll discuss some more specifics at that point. But we appreciate your support, we appreciate your time, and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll now move up the agenda to get to our 10:30 public hearing.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We're back to have a public hearing on an ordinance to amend Chapter 72, Article 1 of the Code of Sussex County by amending the definition and application of moderate income used to determine eligibility for moderately priced housing units. At the beginning of the hearing, the county will hear a presentation from Brandi Nauman, and after she has explained the proposed ordinance, the council will have an opportunity to question her on that. After that, the public will have an opportunity to comment and give us their views.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll be brief. As you recall, the settlement agreement with HUD stipulated that the county amend the moderately priced housing unit program to expand the existing household income qualifications for participation in the program. This amendment lowers the household income guidelines from 80 to 125% of area median income for Sussex County to 50% to 125 of AMI. So in other words, developers that choose to provide units to the lower tier of those household incomes must ensure that their MPHU units in the project are affordable to those of that 50 to 80% range. That's really a pretty simple amendment.
Okay. Council have any questions?
Questions?
No.
If none, this is the opportunity for the public to comment on this matter. I do have one letter that has been forwarded, and it was from the Delaware Housing Coalition. It was addressed to Mr. Michael Vincent, President. Dear President Vincent, I am sorry I cannot attend the Sussex County Council meeting today, but I am writing on behalf of the Delaware Housing Coalition to support the proposed lowering of the income threshold for the moderately priced housing program so that Sussex County households earning 50% of the area's median income, roughly $30,000 a year for a family of four, would be able to afford homes. The housing recovery is slow, but when it gets some momentum, we are sure that the county will be pleased that it has made a change that helps to encourage making affordable homes available to residents who are in greater need. Even with the housing market still in the doldrums, Sussex County suffers from a very wide gap between median home prices and what a low-income household can afford, still over $47,000 at the end of 2012. We also applaud the suggestion by Brandon Nauman that the density bonus be increased. This would not only encourage development and greater participation, but also make sense from the point of view of building compact developments, allowing open space and the conservation of agricultural uses. The mission of the Delaware Housing Coalition is focused on those with the greatest housing burdens, and it's very heartening to know that the council is considering instituting this change, signed by Ken Smith, director. And I'll pass this down to you, Mr. President. Now, is there anyone else in attendance today that would like to address this? In the back of the room, please.
My name is Dan Kramer. Let me get this straight. We're going to have a developer go out here and build $100,000, I'll just use an example, $100,000 units. But out of them units, he has to sell somebody that's only got $30,000 worth of income. They got to pay less. I got news for you. I've never been rich. Don't expect ever to be rich. But I'll be dead gum. These people can afford to go out and they can buy. There's trailers out there to buy. There's a whole lot of stuff out there they can buy. But you go and tell a developer that he's got to kiss everybody in his duck so that somebody can have a brand new unit? Give me a break.
Is there anyone else that would like to address this issue? Anyone else in attendance like to address this? Mr. President, I am seeing no others that would like to address this issue. Mr. Phillips?
Brandy, could you come up again? What is the mechanism that will allow that person at a 50% of the median income to afford a house in this development?
Well, there's several different mortgage products that are available today. We've, with NSP, we've come across, for example, USDA Rural Development has an amazing subsidy mortgage program where I believe it's down to almost 1% based on income for a typical 30-year mortgage. So there's a lot of mortgage products out there that are specifically geared to assist those of a lower income. And just to emphasize, this is an entirely voluntary program at the moment. So any developer that comes forth with a project comes of his own volition and offers 15% of his total project towards this program.
So what was the logic when this program was first set up to put it at that 80% threshold?
To be honest, and I honestly, I wasn't here at that time, but at that point, the real estate market was booming in Sussex County. I mean, prices were $300,000, $400,000, especially on the east side of the county, and people that were in the service industry and young professionals just weren't really able to live anywhere near where they were working. So this was a mechanism to allow them to live near where they worked, getting just as quality of a unit or a house as anyone else in the development for a price that was affordable to them specifically.
Will the developer now have to offer a lower priced unit than before to comply with this 50%?
Yes, if they choose to, and honestly, it's up to the developer what, there's three different income tiers. So again, it's all voluntary. So if the developer wants to offer it to his units to that higher income bracket, then it wouldn't even, they wouldn't even touch the 50% and below. But they do, higher density bonuses are associated with the lower income bracket. So that's where that would come into play.
And it would just be lower.
Right. So the maximum sales price for that lower tier would be slightly lowered for those that are 50% and below.
Do you think we have a high enough density bonus to get developers to participate in this program?
Well, that was one of the things that I brought up before is we need to make this a more marketable program. And right now, when this program was first created, a density bonus and the expedited review was a great incentive without having to use any sort of financial incentives. And now we kind of need to we need to look at that again, because right now they aren't as attractive as they were in 2005 and 2006. So that's just something to consider. So this is sort of our step one in kind of working on this ordinance, I think.
Very good.
Any more questions of council?
If not, Mr. President, at this point, since...
I just wonder what age bracket they've got to be in to start this in order to get qualified.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part.
What age bracket do they start at? Is it 30-year-old or 25?
It's anyone 40? That would qualify for a mortgage. There's no age restrictions.
It sort of reminds me of my parents telling me when I was 21, said, you want as much as I've got after working 40 years. Hmm. So it's almost, when you set up the community, getting what they want at 21, 22 years old, 24 years old, whatever, end up getting the same things we've had that we've worked years to get. Mm-hmm. And yet we're supposed to finance and pay for that. Just kind of makes me think of that line of thinking.
Okay.
Any more questions of council?
And Mr. President, we've asked twice if there are any other comments from the audience. There was not. At this point, we can close the public hearing on this matter, and the council can act now if they so desire.
Okay. Thank you, Randy. We'll close the public hearing. Unless someone council disagrees, we'll close public comment. And if you'd read the short title.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance to amend Chapter 72, Article 1 of the Code of Sussex County by amending the definition and application of moderate income used to determine eligibility for moderate priced housing units.
Pleasure, Council.
I'll make the motion.
Mr. Fulton makes a motion.
Second.
Mrs. Deaver seconds. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you all very much. Next, Mr.
Yes, Mr. President. Now is the time that we're going to, that's scheduled for the zoning hearings. And when council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are considered legislative hearings, because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Sussex County, in its zoning and land use decision, does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken in consideration by the county in its deliberations. Each application shall be announced. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the planning and zoning hearing, and these minutes will be made part of the record, along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless the council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand and state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign the sheet at the speaker stand. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to Mr. Lank, and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that prior speakers have already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or to switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. The first hearing today is change of zone number 1727, the application of Lewis D. O'Neill. Mr. Lang?
Good morning, thank you.
I have a question. Why would this be on in the morning? I'm sure the public's all been notified that it wouldn't be in the afternoon.
Short public hearing that would have been all by itself in the afternoon session. It's just more convenient to put it in the morning.
So I'm sure everybody was told that, advertised that.
Mm-hmm. This is an application.
It was properly advertised, and it was in the agenda, and the applicant's here.
Good.
This is an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from AR1 Agriculture Residential District to a CR1 Commercial Residential District, and to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broad Creek Hunter, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 1.10 acres, more or less, lying north of Route 466, Sycamore Road, and east of U.S. Route 13, and being more specifically identified as Tax Map ID District 232, Map 12, Parcel 107, and Parcel 106.02, which is a part of that parcel. Now, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on March 21st of 2013. Before you, and it was in your packet on Friday, is a copy of two-page a report of the Commission for their public hearing action on March 21st. The Commission at March 21st held a public hearing. The Commission recommended approval of change of zone 1727 for Lewis D. O'Neill for a change of zone from AR1 to CR1 based on a record made at the public hearing for the following reasons. This application is an extension of existing commercially zoned property. It is also adjacent to the Sussex County Paramedic Station. CR1 zoning is appropriate for this site. The site is at the intersection of Sycamore Road and U.S. Route 13, where all four corners have commercial zoning. It is also along a commercially zoned corridor of U.S. Route 13. Adelda has not objected to the rezoning, and it will not adversely affect traffic on area roadways. This is a reasonable extension of the applicant's business on adjacent property. No parties appeared in opposition to the application. The rezoning will not adversely affect neighboring properties or the community. There was a motion by Mr. Ross, seconded by Mr. Smith, and carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons stated, and that motion carried unanimously 5-0. Just for reference, the O'Neills have an antique store on the corner of Sycamore and 13.
Oh, yeah.
They are proposing an expansion on Sycamore Road, which is a small residential structure between their business and the paramedic station. And then on the north side of their property, they're proposing another half-acre extension to more square up the property and make it a little bit larger. Mm-hmm. So they would have approximately 2 acres in general at that site as commercially zoned if this is so approved. I did receive one additional agency comment since the Commission's public hearing. It's from the Sussex Conservation District. We are advised that there are three soil types on these two parcels as proposed for expansion. The applicant, if he did any construction, would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices. We are advised that there are no storm flood hazard areas affected, no tax digit affected. There would not be necessary for any off-site drainage improvements, and it's not likely that any on-site drainage improvements will be required. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
President, Council.
The applicant would like to come forward and make your statements.
I'm Lewis O'Neill, Laurel, Delaware. I own O'Neill's Antiques. This is land that we have owned for probably 10 years or more, and we just didn't get it zoned commercial, but we'd like to get it zoned commercial and to be conform with the property that's next to us and all. So I just ask your indulgence that we could have it zoned.
Okay.
Any questions?
Question, Council? Mm-hmm.
No questions, Council. Do you have anyone else that you would like to speak for you today?
No.
Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone here today like to speak in favor of the application? Seeing none, is there anyone here today that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. President, this time we can close the public hearing on this matter. And if the council so desires, we could act today on this.
Yes.
We will close public hearing. Unless anybody has any concerns, we'll close public comment. Mm-hmm. Ask Mr. Ward to read the short title.
Yes. It's an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural district to a CR1 commercial residential district for certain parcels of land lying and being in Broad Creek 100, Sussex County, involving two parcels containing 1.10 acre, more or less, tax map ID 2-32-12, parcel 107 and 106.02, part of.
Pleasure, Council.
Make a motion to adopt the order.
Second.
Mr. Cole makes a motion. Mr. Phillips makes a second to approve the ordinance. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes, this is kind of an application that should be approved. Small business have needs to expand. That's a good news. It's certainly appropriate where it is in a business area. And I agree with planning and zoning for all the reasons they gave.
Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the location. My wife is especially. the Route 13 is a major corridor, state of Delaware. There is also very large number of other commercial uses in the immediate area. So I can't imagine there'd be any negative impacts, and it's an extension of an existing commercial district, which has historically been there quite a while. So I'll vote yes.
Mr. Phillips.
I vote yes. Being on Route 13, it's certainly an appropriate use, and when you consider the commercial use around it, of course, it's an appropriate rezoning.
Mr. Wilson.
I vote yes with planning and zoning, and also I think they've already got a few stoplights already up there, so we won't require another stoplight, so our own traffic can get down the highway.
I also agree with planning and zoning's reasoning, and I think it makes sense. It's on 13. It's a commercial area. It adds to their property for more commercial use, which is a good thing. I vote yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
The second item is an old business item. It's the application, conditional use number 1950, the application of Erlen Rivera to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district and a GR general residential district for parking commercial tractor trailers. Be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Nanticoke 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 9.59 acres, more or less, lying west of Route 516, also known as Concord Pond Road, 600 feet south of Route 525, also known as King Road, and being identified as tax map ID 231, map 12, parcel 152. Also in your packet last Friday and before you excuse me, you have a copy of the old business item for today's date. This public hearing was reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission on January 10th of 2013. whereby the commission did defer action after giving consideration in a public hearing. On January 24th, the commission discussed this application under old business. There was a motion by Mr. Smith, seconded by Mr. Johnson, and carried unanimously to defer action on that date again. On February 14th of 2013, the commission again discussed this application under old business. And again, before you, if you'd like me to read it again, I read it last week.
That's fine.
You have a report of the commission and a recommendation to approve this application with conditions. That's all I have, unless you have a question.
Do you remember why they deferred it? What were they looking for? Did they need more information?
The first deferral was deferral just for giving consideration, and typically they want to make sure everybody's been out to see the site.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. The second time was on January 10th, there were five members present. On January, January 10th, they deferred action for further consideration. They were all present. On the 24th, they were all present then too. So it was just to look at the site more specifically and to come up with conditions. Typically, they want to get the conditions prepared, and so they come up in agreement after discussion. On 14th, they did vote on it, and there were five parties present. So typically, it's to go look at the site and get the conditions the way they want to create them.
I think the reason that we deferred last week is one of their conditions, 6E,
right,
requires this 100-foot setback on the property, and there's no way that it will fit 10 tractor and trailers on the property 100-foot setback in that 1-point-some acres of ground.
Right, because the application was advertised as 9.59 when the applicant appeared before the commission in public hearing and before council. It's shown right on the tax map of a proposed conditional use boundary on that property of 1.4 acres. And as you stated, one of the conditions recommended by Mr. Ross was that that be a 100-foot from any property line, which would mean that they would have to take 100 foot off each side, basically, and it's a narrow front and widens in the back. And the back portion of the property is typically wooded.
Correct.
And they were trying to maintain it in the area they were utilizing for that business without proper approval.
I guess the question was, I think we asked you to go back or somebody, is what is our answer?
Well,
obviously, if we approve with the conditions that P&Z recommended with 6E, it won't work. So should we turn it down? Should we make them come back and ask for more? I mean, this won't fit.
If you read all of 6E, basically it makes reference that if it doesn't fit, it would have to go back through the public hearing process to the commission. Based on that.
A little convoluted on the earth.
Well, it seems logic. A little silly that we're putting a 100-foot setback even on boundaries of their own land. Is that correct?
They'd be putting the 100-foot setback would be from the entire perimeter of the property of the conditional use. And if you read it, it could be interpreted it had to be 100 off that 1.4-acre line that's proposed to be the boundary. So you're moving everything toward the front. You take 100 foot off each side, and you're squeezing it into an area at the maximum is less than around 60 feet.
68 feet, we said last week.
That's without counting
right.
The 100 foot off of
the back.
That line, the 1.4-acre line.
Was that because of the neighbors complaining about the noise?
There was only one objection during the public hearing, and it was the individual that rented a home right next door to the site and on behalf of his tenant.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was references to noise, loud music, engines running, et cetera.
And we've addressed that in some of these conditions, right, about the running, leaving things running and all that stuff.
There's
right?
There's references right. to the acreage to be cleared as 1.4 acres.
Right.
There's reference to, it's a finding, the reference in the condition for a maximum of 10 trucks and trailers. That would be 10 of each.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be made clear that it's not just 10 total of 5 and 5 to make 10, but it's 10 of each. And all trucks be operable and have valid registration, no servicing and maintenance of the vehicles on the property, that it be parking areas and space to be clearly designated on sites. So they've got to mark the area that's going to be used for parking. The 100-foot setback, security lighting would be downward illuminated in the site plan, and then the screening, downward screening of the lighting. And they would have to actually mark out the area that's going to be used for the parking. So that would be specifically located on the site plan and on the site.
Mr. Lank, I know on numerous occasions, council has decided to amend conditions. And would it, from your knowledge of this site, be appropriate if the council wanted to amend a condition that the 100-foot setback does not apply on the any boundaries that they share with other lands of their own?
Oh, their own property?
Maybe just the one, the where the line is for the boundary. Well, typically on the application, there could be the boundary is the setback. So you've got another 8 acres or 7+ acres to the rear that's not going to be utilized as part of this application unless they were to expand. Okay. So it is a natural boundary there. So if you eliminate it to the side rear, you still only have 68 foot at the maximum of area between the 200 foot from the side. So the 100 foot appears to be really restrictive as far as the use of the property.
So even if you eliminated the 100 feet on the side that they share with other lands that they still own?
It ends up 68 foot, I think it was.
Okay. Well, so it still creates a problem then?
It was right, 68 foot, I think it's the right number.
I mean, if the Planning and Zoning Commission is supporting to put 10 trucks there and then comes in with a condition that says, you know, makes it so they can do that, that doesn't make sense. And I don't think we should, maybe it was overlook or oversight, maybe they didn't, nobody went out there and measured. So I think we ought to look at it that way. Now, if there's issues about the noise factors and hours of operation, I can't remember now back, were they going to go 24 hours a day in and out of there?
There was no condition on hours because it's typically an operation that serves the poultry industry in the county, and there could be
early morning, late
evening hours.
Right.
So
right.
It could be 24/7.
So, I mean, so I would suggest that we relax that 100 feet so that the guy can get the 10 trucks, which the Planning and Zoning Commission supported, it seemed. And then maybe address that there should be, you know, after, you know, a certain hour at night, there's no loud noise, no music or something like that. Can we do that? Of course, it's hard to enforce. And then maybe even hours of operation. But then again, like you say, it's the poultry industry. And
it's pretty much
for economic development, we got to make sure that they can drive at all hours right there.
Because it's agriculture.
So anyway, I think we ought to amend it. I hate us to approve something that the guy can't do. That doesn't make that seems disingenuous on our part.
George, look at this thing. It says they have to have a fence up around the 100 foot. Is that the 100 foot perimeter or outside boundaries?
That would establish the area to be used for parking.
For parking only.
So there would be a setback.
So the fence would come.
Locate the fence, and then that would be the boundary where you park your vehicle.
So the fence would come in 100 feet.
If you use 100 foot, right.
That's what I mean, if we did. Right. I was thinking if we did not have that fence there, it says no parking of trucks. The guy could have at least ran on his own property and then parked the truck within the 100, within the boundaries. But to put that fence there is almost impossible.
Well, I think it's ridiculous to restrict the man the use of his own property like that. I mean, it just seems too restrictive, Sam, if you're a private property guy like you say you are.
I agree with you.
You should, we should maybe, the noise is going to travel. 100 foot's not going to stop any noise. So if these things are running, they will hear them, whether it's 10 feet or 100 feet. So if the council thinks it's appropriate to do a trucking operation in that site, then we ought to make it so it can work.
Well, the way to make it work is to take the boundary requirement off of the boundaries of his own land, as I believe our attorney said. There's no reason to put a 100-foot buffer.
Why don't we just let
his own land.
Vance? Why don't we just let planning and zoning determine? Back, we put it back on planning and zoning that they accommodate the 10 trucks in the parking. And you know, as sir, how can we word that to say Everett that? That the Planning and Zoning Commission, through the site plan approval process, would locate the appropriate places for parking in relationship to the boundaries.
Like that.
Well, I believe you would need to amend E in order to do that.
I agree with that. So I think I'm suggesting we probably amend E if there's support to allow this gentleman to have a 10 trucks on
and
that
a
site.
A would still apply, so it wouldn't make any difference in a sense of speaking.
Well, the standard, just for your reference, as you know, the standard setbacks, in the zoning category that it's located in, just say it's AR, the minimum front would be 40 from the public road right away, 15 on each side. But because part of it's GR, then the sides could be 10 feet.
Right. Well,
so
we
if you want to establish a greater boundary at a perimeter buffer from the property line, you could do anything in between that dimension and the 100 that's proposed by the commission.
Could we maybe push it back and let Planning and Zoning Commission determine that? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. There are experts, and I would prefer, instead of us shooting from the hip, to allow Planning and Zoning to establish that.
Well, what I was saying was that if you approved it deleting E, then you're going to the setbacks that are allowed based on the code, and they're mm-hmm. basically 40, 15, and 15 on sides. And you said to leave the zoning boundary alone where the conditional use boundary is, that would eliminate that back there.
How would we word that, Mr. Moore?
Well, what Mr. Lank just indicated, you would delete E and any setback, which then the standard setbacks would come into play, which would be the 40 on the front, 15 on the side.
But I believe we would like to see more than 15 on the sides next to the neighbors.
Then what you could state, for example, 50 feet on the side of the neighbors, there shall be a 50-foot setback from any perimeter boundary with a third-party owner, for example.
Is 50 feet enough?
Was that
next to the third party?
I don't know if it's enough. I'd rather let Planning and Zoning determine that. If they could possibly just say that they would make it 50 feet or greater to accommodate the parking place.
Can we
need to do is accommodate 10 parking trucks of these trailers, and that's it. That's what we ought to be doing. Somebody show us how we're going to accommodate the 10, and then make that the setbacks.
Can we modify E in a way, Mr. Moore,
will
give Planning and Zoning the flexibility to create the final boundary at site plan review?
Well, you already do. If you delete E, you got the final site plan required to go to the commission anyway. But you're trying to be specific about where they
are. I'm just trying to say that the Planning and Zoning Commission accommodate the 10 trucking trailers
with
the proper setbacks needed.
They've already established their rear perimeter because they've established 1.4 acres.
Right.
So we know that there's nothing behind that's going to be affected by this application. So then you're really dealing with the sides. The front's a minimum 40 anyway. So what do you do on the sides? That's the whole question.
If we don't specify as in E any distance, can Planning and Zoning still put something greater than what code says?
If you don't specify, the setbacks are going to be 40 front, 15 side.
Right. But
Planning and Zoning can't change that, correct?
Because that's the ordinance.
It's subject to site plan review, but they're going to bring a site plan in and say, this is where we're going to park the trucks and trailers. And if the commission has to review that based on their submittal, they'd have to consider it because it's as long as it complies with the minimum.
Right.
Unless you stipulate more.
Right. It's a conditional use. I guess we need to put in some kind of wording to either give them the flexibility or put a minimum.
Correct.
Or
not to exceed. Say a minimum of 50 and not to exceed 100.
That bothers me because there's a reason they did that. There's a reason that they put the 100 feet in there, and I don't know what it is. I wonder if there's any visual shelter at all called for. I mean, these are trucks, and they're next door to a residents. I don't understand what the big fuss is about. Is it not in an appropriate area? Is it, you know, what? Why was it objected to in the first place? And why the 100 feet? I don't really, you know, and that's not even doable. So it's very strange. And they went out there 3 times to look at it.
They've looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I didn't realize how the 100 foot affected the application until after the commission rendered a decision, you get back in the office and you start looking at it and realize that there was 68 foot.
Then we should modify it, I think.
So I didn't realize that it was.
Modify it.
Yeah. They're regular shaped parcel and it gets wider at the back. So the 100, looking at it graphically as the whole parcel, you might have said 100 is fine because there's plenty of room in between in the back.
Would anyone like to make an attempt and a motion to modify E in any manner or?
Well, does Everett have any suggestions until we don't do this 10 times?
Well, it depends. If your desire is to eliminate E, which would be the only 15 feet, which is required. So the other then would be there shall be a blank number of feet, whatever number,
right,
setback from any perimeter boundary that adjoins a third-party owner.
Could we say a minimum of 50 and not to exceed 100, like which they had suggested, or can we give that? And then
I would just state your number.
Okay, 50 feet.
Second.
And I do have a question about that. We have no shelters whatsoever on the sides, and I'm surprised we didn't call for that.
The commission recommendation was to do a post and rail fencing just to designate the area they're going to park in.
Just to designate
the trees on the site, but they're minimal because it's already been cleared in the front portion of the property. The rear acreage is pretty much wooded.
Fully wooded.
The rear is, but the people live on the side.
Larger acreage. Now, the sides are pretty much just tree here and there, shrubs, not maintained, pretty much.
Okay, so what I have prepared would be there shall be a 50-foot setback from any perimeter boundary with a third-party owner. Everything else remains the same.
Right. What you're doing is you're striking the first sentence in 6E and replacing it with what you propose.
That's correct.
Okay. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on that motion?
My only question is I would love to see something go along with that to some kind of a visual shelter. If the council isn't interested in that, then...
That'd be another motion.
I know, but, you know... Okay, so that would be my question. I have no question on that then.
Mr. Phillips.
I'm good.
Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carries.
So you amended E now then.
We've amended E and changed the 100 to the 50 and make sure that it's only the boundaries that adjoin another property owner.
That's correct.
I don't know if, I hope you don't have flat tires on one of these trucks while it's parked there. Look at C. No service. No repairs.
Right.
If the four-wheel truck has a flat tire while he's sitting there, he's in trouble.
That's incidental.
Good point.
The applicant's comments, if you remember, I provided last week. One of them stated at no time will refrigeration units on any trailer stored on site be started running or operational. At no time will the trucks be left to idle for an extended period other than time to warm up the diesel and to be able to pull out. That's pretty much what it sounds like.
Oh, I think we want that.
But that didn't make it into the...
No, it didn't.
No, that was the amendment. We can still amend and add another... We haven't voted on it yet.
This was from the...
Applicant.
From the applicant. So. At no time will any general maintenance be performed on any truck, trailer, vehicle except for emergency repair. So it did provide the emergency repair that, like somebody stated, if you had a flat tire, you had to fix it before you pull out anyway.
That's a much better C than what...
Well, I would make a motion maybe to incorporate the applicant's suggestions here.
They're very good.
Could we somehow include these suggestions here?
Yes.
Because that would also be another added degree of protection, and they've offered it. They've proffered this, so I think it's...
Yes, they were proffered. The council held a public hearing on February 5th, and we received them on February 13th.
Right, I recall that.
On response to the applicant.
So I would make a motion to incorporate those as conditions.
And Mr. Lank, those, if I recall, you read more than one point.
Seven total.
Okay, the ones that you read, I believe you just read a couple. Then should those two take the place of C? It might be helpful if you reread those as well.
At no time will refrigeration units on any trailer stored on site be started running or operating. Two, at no time will trucks be left to idle for an extended period and or an unreasonable amount of time. Reasonable time will be considered that time needed to sensibly allow the truck's engine and operating system to warm to allow the truck to be driven in a safe and reasonable manner. This shall include the time needed to hook and or unhook from trailers. And three, at no time will any general maintenance be performed on any truck, trailer, or vehicle except for emergency repairs needed for the safe and reasonable operation of said truck, trailer, or vehicle.
Okay, so there were three that you've read, and I believe then a motion would be appropriate to strike C and in its place add a new C, D, and E, which would cause renumbering the total amount of the conditions would then run through A through I.
Mm-hmm. Entertain that motion.
I'll make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, yes. Mr. Phillips, to incorporate those three items read by Mr. Lank. Insert that, I guess, starting with C, and that will then expand by three our letters.
It'll expand by two. There was a new C, and then two additional.
Well, I entertain that motion. We have a motion and a second. We will take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Getting close.
Anything else, Mr. Lank?
So we've amended the 100 foot to a 50 foot.
Feet, yes,
okay,
ma'am.
We're done with that. All right, yep, good.
And
you're done?
No, I thought I had a motion on the conditions. Is that the whole thing?
That was.
Yes.
No, that
they
was
were on the
I'm
conditions,
sure.
and they voted on those.
I'm ready. Yeah, I have a question, Everett. You said we're replacing C, deleting C, and then replacing it with a C, D, and E, 1, 2, 3 originally.
That's correct.
Right.
So then you would have, let me see if I got my number right.
We'd go to H and I then.
Do we end up with H?
And I.
That's what I got.
And I.
I don't see I.
And you read three things?
I read three, but we took one out.
Right, that leaves
yes,
two.
That leaves two additional.
So it would be A, B, existing, C, D, E, based on what I read, and then E becomes F, F becomes G, and H becomes, G becomes H. And it was H.
I was on what you just handed me. I replaced C with number one, added a new D, which was the number two.
Right.
And a new E, which is number three. And then I slid, then made D on through, would change clear through I.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I was playing with the alphabet.
There you go. Okay. We're all amended.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hope so.
We'll have Mr. Moore, if you'd read the... short term.
The short title is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district and a GR general residential district for parking commercial tractor trailers to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Nanticoke Country, Sussex County, containing 9.59 acres more or less, tax map ID 2-31-12-152 as and with conditions as amended, A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
Make a motion to adopt the ordinance with the amended conditions.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
I vote yes with the amended conditions and based also on the, I think it was 5-0 vote by the commission and their reasons.
Mr. Cole.
I'll vote yes with the amended conditions.
Phillips.
I think it is an appropriate use under the circumstances, despite some of the objections of the neighbors. With these conditions, I think most of the concerns have been satisfied, at least from my perspective. So I vote yes.
Mr. Wilson.
I vote yes on the recommendations of P&Z and the amendments.
I agree with the conditions. I agree with conditions that we have amended. I think it makes more sense on the property, so I will vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now, Mr. Lawson, we're back to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's been brought to my attention that Mr. Godwin has got to